Hi, I'm Rachel T.
Hi, I'm Eva.
Hi, I'm Rachel G.
We are all Girl Scouts, and this is WGXC ACRA.
Lucy Lion, the King of Beasts.
Music from elsewhere and beyond.
Huge elephant trumpet across the plains.
Imaginary soundtracks to unmade foreign films.
And there are rhino, those craggy creatures surviving from a bygone age.
Snack Point Charlie. Hosted by Jeff Economy. Every first Wednesday from 10 p.m. to midnight on WGXC 90.7 FM, WGXC.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather. Temperatures will start right at the freezing point this morning and bump up to only 36 degrees by 1 p.m. A system rolling through the area will drop patches of light snow today, with some thin accumulation occurring this afternoon. Watch for changing conditions around the afternoon rush hour. Overnight temps drop to 28 degrees, and a snow-sleet mix is expected Thursday morning, bringing a half inch of accumulation, before turning to rain, which will last most of the day as temperatures climb to 38 by Sunday. Sunset today will be at 4:54 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow will be at 7:04 a.m. Looking way up, we see last night our planet's magnetic field briefly cracked open, allowing a flood of solar particles to pour in and light up a large swath of the atmosphere over Norway. The previously referenced large coronal hole is rotating away from us, even though it's already ejected a stream of plasma and is due to strike tonight, causing light magnetic disturbances. Solar wind speed is currently 363 kilometers per second at 4 protons per milliliter. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 2. Quiet. There have been 3 days since the last sunspot. This has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by the First Presbyterian Church of Hudson, a faith community open to all. Whether you are single, married, divorced, gay, wealthy, poor, or no habla inglés, if you are just browsing, just woke up, or just got out of jail, it doesn't matter if you work on Wall Street or if you sleep on Wall Street, you belong. We love soccer moms, crying babies, vegans, hipsters, seekers and doubters, tourists and locals. All are welcome. Services held Sunday mornings at 10:45 a.m. You can find us on the web at firstpreshudson.org.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Claire in Acre, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
And good morning, Bright Siders. This is Pastor Kim, your perpetual optimist, here at you again. And on Bright Side Wednesday, this first Wednesday in February. So good to be back. And no matter where you're at, this is where you want to be. We've got music for the mind, music for the soul, music for the body, make you want to move. I have some in-studio guests with me today, too. And I'm looking forward to sharing that with you. So listen, we're going to get ready to get into that. But before we do, I've got something for you. And this is Miss Mandisa with Waymaker. Let's hear what she's saying. Interesting. That's not Miss Mandisa. So, here we go again. How come somebody else's track is playing on my track? Let me try this again. All righty then. While crew comes to help us do what we do and figure out why we got another track playing on my line, I'm going to be introducing to you our in-studio guests today. It is Black History Month, and we are celebrating the past, the present, and the future. I want to welcome to our program, and I'm very proud and happy for this young woman, Ms. Kimberly Irwin. She has published and produced for public reception her first book, and had a very impressive book launch on this Sunday past. She is a native of Hudson, New York, and I'm calling today our brightest and best for Black History Month, Black Hudsonians on the Rise. So, Ms. Kimberly Irwin, will you say hello to the people out there?
Hello, people out there, and thank you, Pastor Kim, for inviting me on your show. I look forward to speaking to your audience this morning.
And we're looking forward to that, too. I need you to try that again, because I don't see your levels changing. Say hello again.
Hello, everyone.
I see them changing a little bit. I hope they do hear you out there. All righty, so Ms. Kimberly Irwin, tell us the title of your book.
The book is called There's Only One Race, The Human One, Says Me, A Children's Book, Ending Racism.
A Children's Book, Ending Racism. I give you snaps and claps for that. So what brought you to this book, this title, at this time? Let me hear about that.
Well, I don't want to ramble on, so make sure you stop me. But because I could talk for days about this book. It's the book that I started in April of last year. With the understanding that students that I was seeing in the school system that I was teaching in the area of, in New York State, were not quite understanding their ethnicity and how to talk about such things. And it was leaving them confused and not pleased in the classroom. So I had stopped writing my adult children's book to indeed help those who needed the guidance. And so I set out to use my adult book as a template for the materials that I would provide to the youth, their parents, and the teachers in the classrooms. Even librarians I've talked to said that they had issues with talking to students and trying to get their responses to books that they try to read to them. One book in particular was by a Black woman called Nappy Like Me. And this one woman thought it would be a great thing to read in the library class, and she said she just didn't get the kind of response she wanted. And my thought was maybe the young people didn't have the language to talk about it. And so we as adults, we need to provide our youth with the material and the ability to talk about their feelings, to talk about those things that they need to connect with to better their lives in the future.
I'm so distressed right now because the songs I had queued up go right into what you just said.
We can play them at the end.
We'll play them somewhere. We're going to try and play one right now. How about that?
Very good.
All right, so I think we're in business. My security blanket walked into the studio. and now I got something playing, and this works. Yeah, this works. But Lauren, Miss Lauren Daigle, and I love Miss Lauren Daigle. I'm going to have to interrupt Miss Lauren Daigle because I did have something else that I wanted to share with you all, and that's going to be from Miss Mandiza. But see, here we go again. Something else is coming in on my line. What up with this?
Now she got something.
All right, beloved, bear with me for a moment. We had a couple of things going on right there, right then. We're going to push on then. We may just do all talk today because I got three songs playing at one time and I don't have a clue what to do. We also have joining us in the studio, and I, for disclosure, I just have to say that all of my guests today are friends, and Kim is a friend that knew me before I knew her. Miss Kimberly Irwin, our author on Highlight Today, and then joining us also is Miss Tanya Jackson, who is a filmmaker. And her mom, Miss Roxanne Wilkins, and I've known, been a pastor to their family for a while, knew Tanya. She was in college, and she's grown now. and as all of Roxanne's children are grown, have mm-hmm. grown children growing of their own, but we're going to talk about a couple of her children today. So this is Black History Month, and I'm just highlighting some of the brightest and the best I call them history makers and movers and shakers.
That's right.
For Black History Month. And so I want to introduce first, amen, I'm going to let Miss Tanya Jackson speak. Tell us a little bit, Miss Tanya, where'd you go to school? I'm told everybody you're a filmmaker. Where'd you go to school and how did you decide on that?
Good morning, everyone. Hope everyone's having a good day. Thank you, Reverend Singletary, for having me on the show. I went to school at SUNY Albany in Albany, New York for my undergrad. I got a BA in communications from there. And then about 10 years later, I found something that I was passionate enough about to get my master's in. So I went to Temple University, where I was living at the time, and got my master's degree in media studies.
Media studies, so not just filmmaking.
Not just filmmaking. So media studies is, at the time it was called broadcasting, telecommunication, and mass media. And so it was more so looking at the theory around communications and media and how we consume media and how we produce media. So more of a media literacy perspective.
Well, I just think this is a divine connection, a divine setup. We have Miss Kimberly, who's into a new venture in media and to publishing her first book and then another one to come, and also an educator in intercultural communications. And then we have you here also. So I think something really powerful is going to be happening mm-hmm. even in this connection.
Yes, yeah, I agree.
I want to come back to, say hello, Miss Roxanne, because I know when you get going.
Oh, yeah, no, that's okay. Good morning.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So Miss Roxanne is here as well. She's Miss Tanya Jackson's mom. And we're going to be coming and bringing you in a minute.
That's okay.
All right. Mm-hmm. So Miss Kimberly, I wanted to ask you about or talk about how you decided upon the style and the approach for your book. For those who have not yet seen the book, and we hope you all will, what is the title again, Kimberly?
There's Only One Race, The Human One, Says Me,
all right.
A children's book, Ending Racism.
All right. So she came up with this approach to this topic, this subject matter, and a style for her book. And I'd like you to talk about that as well. Like, how did you come up with this approach to this hot topic, this, you know, and that you geared it towards children? How did you come about that?
Well, it's actually like a three-pronged approach. I didn't want to reinvent the wheel that I had started with the adult book. So I looked at the main three entities that really forward an understanding about our world and about ourselves, and to try to better make the world a better place. So that includes action.
So the first step, which I consider a segment in the book, is to identify positively with yourself. So first you have to really know and love yourself before you can really commit to doing something like that for others, in my opinion and in my research. And the next thing is to know your issue. If you don't know that you have a problem, you can't fix it. And then once you know you have a problem, if you don't know how to go about transforming that problem into something that can work for you, then you can't get to a solution. So a good way of knowing what the problem is to find out to research its history. How did I get here? And then once we know how we got here, we can then do better and going forward. And so in going forward, we need right action. So that's my third segment. How to have children understand what they can do to forward their own betterment in in school or in the playground, in their homes, in their community, especially with the ideas of ethnic diversity.
I want to invite Roxanne and Tanya into the conversation because we were all at the book launch.
Yay.
And we all got our copies. anything you want to say, because I was really impressed, intrigued with the approach that she took to the style for this book.
No, I'm just plain excited about what's going on here, what you were saying about this connection, because of the times that we're in and the idea. And the idea that where we are with the children and how far they are from knowing themselves and being able to deal with the world at large and how to fit into it with themselves. I'm excited about just with where you guys are and in that fact, because we're so far from being able to be at one with ourselves in that, even today. That shocks me.
Even today. You know, which brings me to Black History Month and why we have a Black History Month, you know. And the fact being that, you know, the what happened with the ancestors of most of us in this room, if not all of us in this room, what happened with our ancestors and, you know, coming here and not having their culture, not having their history, not having their language, not having their spirituality, you know, not having a freedom to be creative, you know, and innovative. A lot of those stories were robbed from us, you know. A lot of the human potential was robbed from us. And so having Black history gives us a light, an opportunity to shine light on those stories that didn't get told. And it also allows us to shine light on some of the, because there's many more than the names we know, but shine light on those bright lights that help build nations, you know, all across this globe. It helped build nations and monuments and, you know, our innovations and our inventions have impacted life, you know, and we don't know, you know, and in not knowing, you know, we have German people who can look back to Germany and, you know, their ancestral heritage, their language, their culture, their customs, and Italy and go on and on and on. And so Black History gives us, Black History Month gives us as Black people in America and the Caribbean, descendants most likely of former slaves, gives us the opportunity to also know our history and our culture and our connections and our connectedness. And I appreciate, like in Kim's book, she has that page that says Out of Africa, you know?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I want to know about that. Like, how did you decide to put that in there?
Well, I don't know if that was on the talking point. But I'm among friends and family here, so I don't mind going a little bit into that. In my research for the adult book on overcoming racism, one of the main points means that we are one family. And I did a lot of science research. And the research in science is about genes, and it's no longer a gene theory, biology. We are all descendants of one group of people coming out of Africa, descending upon the rest of the planet and procreating everywhere. So the idea is, when you look at one's genes, we can, and you can do that now because there's boxes you can send your DNA into, and you can find, people find that they thought they were from one place and they have three other
ancestral genes
from ancestrals in different nations. And they're like, whoa, because it's not what we see. It's not what we look like. In fact, I was talking to a biologist yesterday. It was in a classroom. And he tells me we're 99.9% similar in our genes. So it's that 0.1% that we visibly see that makes us different. That's not enough to consider ourselves a different race. That's not enough to consider ourselves not the same, from the same family, the human family. And where would we have all derived from? Africa. There's bones that have been discovered there, and that the way we look mainly comes from that area, and then it kind of merges outward. And China being the next great place where a lot of people started
populating.
Mm-hmm. And then moving through to then called the West, which is Western Europe, and then the South, and all these other areas. So these places have been populated long before what we thought of as the traditional understanding of the Europeans coming to this world, to this new world, quote unquote. So once we all recognize we're from one place, we're one family, then we can look at each other and see that we're not different at all. We can make ourselves different socially, but not biologically.
Well, which
and hopefully not spiritually.
Well, that brings me to, man, y'all gonna have to tune in next 2 weeks, because my song choices were so hot and so on point. But anyway, we're gonna move past. I'm gonna get over it. Matter of fact, I'm gonna take a plug for the cause. Okay, this is listener supported radio, and we need your support. Yeah, we can use some donations. We need some new equipment. I put that plug in there all the time. This is listener supported radio for open ears. You are listening to WGXC Acre, Catskill, and Hudson, 98.7 FM, WGXC.org online. We live and stream. You can also catch up with our programs on audio archive there. So I put in a plug for the cause. Brings me to something I did put on the talking point just to calm you a little bit. To calm you down a little bit when you got here, not to catch you off guard, but on that page Out of Africa, and you know, I think we texted about this, we may not have particularly talked about it, but on that page of Out of Africa, and you hit on religious affiliations,
yes,
which I thought was bold and brave, because people are always trying to be politically correct, and but you do talk about, you know, us all coming from one place, one origin, one beginning, and it's undeniable, it's biological and scientific facts. So the Christian, Judeo-Christian scriptures talk about that. It talks about us coming out of, you know, one creation, male and female, created in the image of God and in the likeness of God. And so I was curious, like, how did Christianity not make it into your book as a religious affiliation?
Well, I was wondering about that. I'm like, what is she talking about? Of course, Christianity is all around us.
It's the largest religion in the world and the largest one in Africa. So I was like,
yes.
How did that happen?
So it didn't make it probably in a good way, but you can be the determination of that. One of the things that I write in under Did You Know, my ethnicity section, because I said there were three sections, identity, ethnicity, and stereotypes. So under ethnicity, I talk about current understanding of terms, because we're dealing with what is today.
Mm-hmm.
And what is today is what we call ourselves. So I talk about our ethnic heritages. So I also then decide that there's some ethnic heritages which are also considered religious heritages. So I wanted to make that note, because in America today, not saying that it's not Christianity, those who follow Christianity elsewhere. But in America today, those who are being deprived or being seen as less than are coming from certain ethnic identities that are also religious identities, and those being what I wrote as Muslim and Jewish. So the people of, like we can see in America, maybe around the time of Kennedy, he was the first Catholic president, and that was a big deal because no Catholic president up until then was even thought of, could ever be thought of as just like have a black man, could ever be thought of as being president. So that was a big change in understanding and accepting maybe Catholicism. But when a Jewish man ran, that was the first thing on the mind where, you know, could we elect a Jewish man? Or obviously now, could we, there are countries that our president today won't even accept into our country because of people that they won't, from other countries that they won't accept into our country because of the religion they follow. And that's the Muslim religion. So these are people in the United States currently that are seeing their ethnicity being negative in America's society, and that also may equate with their religion, religious identity. And thankfully here, being of Christian faith, it's not a negative in America.
But it is.
Oh, it is. So let's have
but
that discussion.
But it is. Okay. You know,
it might be coming under fire.
Well, no, it's also, you know, like we're not supposed to, you know, talk about religion at work, or we're not supposed to talk, you know, our faith at work. We're not supposed to talk about it at school. We're not supposed to read our Bible. We're not supposed to pray. But yet Muslims, and particularly in New York City and other parts of the world, but in New York City on Friday at Juma, they will jump out of their taxi cabs, leave them in the middle of the street and go into the mosque. You know, and it's accepted, you know. They can park where is no parking designated. They can park and go to their service. We still can't. If I pray publicly in the name of Jesus, I'm highly criticized. But if a Muslim person prays in Arabic, it's accepted. If a Jewish person prays in Hebrew, it's accepted. So there is, even in this quote-unquote Christian country, which is not Christian country anymore, actually, you know, we're very diverse. So, right. But, you know, we just had shootings in churches, you know,
exactly.
People are being, you know, killed at Bible study, you know, so, and I think the point that you made about Kennedy in that, you know, people did not think that they would see a Catholic president because they did not differentiate his religion from his life, you know. And in a lot of ways, you know, we're having that tension in America right now, you know, where, okay, if you're Christian, people think you're going to be right wing or evangelical or whatever, you know. If you're Christian, they think you're going to be this and that. And then there's repercussions because of that, because people do expect that your life is going to line up with your religious belief.
Right.
So that's my plug for you to plug it in there in your second edition.
Although I understand that, but I think my main point with this book is to look at ethnicity. Mm-hmm. And so I don't really still, I mean, again, we can have the conversation here. I think for children to see their religion as their ethnic identity, it usually, like, you were born into it. And so that it's something that even if you don't practice it, you would probably still consider yourself that. So I know there are non-practicing Jews who are Jewish. They still consider themselves Jewish. And I know that might be the same as some people who are Christian.
As
like my mother was, you know, a Baptist, and I kind of consider myself a Baptist. But I don't wear anything that shows me as being a Baptist. And that's, and I mean, just,
oh girl.
But what I mean, no, I guess what I'm saying is we're talking about ethnic identity, uh-huh, and how people see it before they see you. And people don't look at my Christianity before they see me. Some people look at...
But every Middle Easterner is not Muslim.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. So I think I say in the book, even some religions
uh-huh,
like Islam, meaning Muslim, or Judaism, meaning Jewish, may be called an ethnic identity. So I'm agreeing that it might be, but I think if we include Christianity,
uh-huh,
then we're including a lot of, you know, many, many people, as opposed to in America.
Uh-huh.
In public, you may feel a certain way, but you can still, I mean, there are, I don't know. I think what I'm saying is for children, when they're going to school, their religion in school, for them, doesn't seem to be a problem, except for if they wear it on their sleeve, like Jewish people or people that also has an ethnic identity as being Jewish or an ethnic identity as being Muslim. So I'm looking at today, and I said some. I'm not saying that Christianity isn't, but it isn't to that degree for the children in school that I'm seeing. And that's, and I guess that's part of my project that you asked earlier. Where do I want to see this? I want to see this type of material available at every school district, so that maybe people of another school district can use their students and talk about their student identity. I have a section in the book that shows flags. So maybe there's, you know, I have a Bengali flag in this book, because in this community we have a growing large Bengali population, and I want them to see themselves in this book. I want them to be recognized. So that's what I'm seeing. And unless I hear from someone in this area that feels uncomfortable because they identify as being a Christian, and I hear it, then I probably wouldn't have put it in. And that's why I didn't put it in, because I didn't hear it or see it, or it wasn't vocalized to me. And I don't want it to be. I don't want young children who are Christian, of Christian faith, to feel uncomfortable in school or at home. So until I hear for something like that, but maybe in my next edition, I would put it in if I heard something like that. But like I said, I don't want to hear that. So,
well, I'm going to get your P.O. box.
Tell me some stories. All right.
And send you some stories. But
and you know what? And I would, because then, that's the point. Yeah, I want people to be aware.
Yeah.
That's what you need to do. You need to be aware of the issue before you can solve it.
And so I also wanted people to be aware of why you omitted it. Because in looking at the book, and it's for me a glaring omission, so I'm like, okay, I know there's a basis for it. I know there's a reasoning behind it, you know. And for other people who look and look at the book and may, you know, see that it's omitted, maybe they, you know, were able to make the connections to what you were saying in some other pages that I did not make in when I looked at that. But I did see the flags and the one, yeah. So, Tanya, you look like you've been wanting to jump into the conversation. Yes, Miss Tanya, did you have something that you wanted to add?
I just wanted to add, I think what Kimberly shared very clear for me in terms of what your choices and your reasoning behind your choices. I just wanted to add, you know, bringing in myself in terms of media literacy and how in terms of my background and what it means to understand the world through our consumption of media. And I think I just wanted to add that I do think we are in a time where it is proliferated through the media that certain ethnic groups are more scary than others here in America and are being treated with violent resistance because of that. And I think that Muslims in particular are in a position right now where it's not just about being verbally, you know, discriminated against. Their bodies are on the line, and their right to even be physically in this country is on the line in a way that I don't think that Christianity at this point is in the same level of resistance in terms of what's normalized in our society. I do think that right now, Christianity has a lot more socialized acceptance, especially when it comes to children, especially when it comes to the way that kids talk to each other and what they see and share by way of what they're seeing in the news, particularly about ethnicities that they don't come home to and play with on a day-to-day basis. And so in the context of this, I can see why that was highlighted, because I do notice that children have a way of talking to each other by way of things that they don't really know, but they saw it. They saw the scary Muslims. They see that when terrorists is being equated with being a Muslim, that when I see someone come to my school with a hijab or just brown with a Middle Eastern looking face, I don't know that he's from India or Sri Lanka or Lebanon, but to me, they're all Muslim because they all look like the scary terrorists on television. And so I think within that context and within the context of this book dealing with these very day-to-day encounters that children have, that's something that I've noticed comes up in schools more than you're a Christian, why are you a Christian? Identity doesn't seem to be at odds with socialization among children, at least right now. That's just what I wanted to add.
Well, thank you for adding. I'm going to send your P.O. box to some people, though. we also want to make another pause for the cause for WGXC 90.7 FM. This is There's a Bright Side Somewhere. And this is your Pastor Kim, a perpetual optimist, right here in studio, beautiful downtown Hudson, New York. I have in the studio with me Miss Kimberly Irwin, author, educator, intercultural communicator, and we are just celebrating her book, which I told her I think is Pulitzer Prize and Nobel Prize consideration worthy, and I truly do. I think she's been brave in taking on the subject of racism and boiling it down, breaking it down to a level for children. And the book is really designed, and I was talking about the styling the approach as well, is designed to be used in classroom settings.
Yes, it is, and it's actually being used currently. The librarian is using this to facilitate Black History Month. He wanted to make sure that it was something that was palpable and be able to introduce not only the topic, but an author that is of the African-American descent. So I thought that was awesome. And I actually would be speaking with him in his classrooms for sixth graders.
For sixth graders. Fantastic. Before we come on to the other side of the room and talk some more about Tanya and why Roxanne and Tanya are here with us today, because initially I gave you the hour, but then when we were talking at your book launch, I realized that, this is just awesome to have so many bright lights in one room at the same time. I wanted to ask, where are you going from here, Miss Kimberly? What's next for you? You said you're going to be doing some teaching, co-teaching in the schools, but you also have another project that you're working on?
Well, I still have the Overcoming Racism book for adults, so I'm on my last two chapters. Uh-huh. So I hope to finish that. But yes, I will be promoting the book, not just to sell it, but for it to be used. It's valuable if it's read to the children, by the children, and by parents. People who really don't have the terminology to discuss the book or the idea of it. It seems scary to even the adults. I've had people question me who are adults about things that were in the book because they say they don't know. So it's actually quite useful for every age. But I'd like to see it, like I said, using the classrooms. In fact, one science teacher, because they have a program called STEAM now in the school systems, and one science teacher said that she would utilize it. She would definitely want a lesson book for it. So I may actually do something like that, create lessons that go along with the topic in the book in the different sections. But for me personally, I do see myself looking to support communities that want to see diversity more tangible in their community. So I'm looking to work with different organizations and city districts to maybe facilitate having a diversity officer program, so that in the areas of the city or in a community that may be 90% white, they still need to deal with diversity. This is a diverse world. So what can they do to affect change in their environment and to help young people and just their constituents to understand race and ethnicity, that we're one race, the human race, and many different ethnicities, and how to support and appreciate one another for our differences, which is just 0.1%.
You know what? I wanted to move on, but you hit on something that I want to underscore, because when we talk about racism and overcoming racism, putting an end to racism, does not mean that we all become blonde, bland. It's that, we still have things that we all bring that are precious and important and and beautiful and exciting. And so it's not like we're trying to get to a point where you say, oh, I don't see your color. It's about, oh, I see your color. It's beautiful, you know. Your food, your music, you know, your language, right? Your mannerisms, whatever the case. You're nodding your head. Let the people know you agree.
Yes, yes, yes.
She's like nodding her head. Yes, yes, yes.
Well, I think that's one of the things I should say, too. The reason why the book is so colorful isn't just because it's for kids. It's the dynamics of the rainbow. Mm-hmm. And it's to show that we have primary and secondary colors. And without all of the different colors, we don't get a rainbow.
That's right.
So if you like rainbows, and I tear up. I tear up too, but I tear up when I see one, those big ones
in
the
yes.
sky.
Oh, yes.
They're too beautiful to me. And I love traveling to different countries and meeting with different people. I like staying home and meeting with different people. Yeah. And so human beings, we're beautiful. God made us beautiful, all of us.
So now how do people get in touch with you? If they want to invite you to come and speak or you know, collaborate with you on the project of your curriculum or whatever, how do they get in touch with you? And also, where can they get a hold of a copy of your book?
Wonderful. Thanks for asking that. First, for the copy of the book. Right here in town, the Spotty Dog Books and Ale has copies. I get sent some pictures about people buying them. They're very excited. So I think they're going soon. We'll try to fill them up. Also, you can go to my website online or the website of the publisher, www.oneuniversalmedia.com. Also on Facebook, you can look for me as the author, Kimberly Y. Irwin, my name. So that's pretty easy to find. And the book may have a page in the future. Right now, though, it's through the author, through the publisher. So again, that's One Universal Media on Facebook also. And through them, you can get to me.
Fantastic, fantastic. Well, thank you again for being here. And, you know, conversation is going to continue. So if you need to jump in, because we want to hear a little bit more about Miss Tanya Jackson.
I'm excited
about
listening.
And her past and present and future projects.
Okay, where would you like to begin?
Well, a past project, a future project, a present project, wherever you want to go.
Okay, let's see it. This is a bit broad. Past projects, I think, can I stay up or no? Do I have to hold it? Okay, just hold it. Past projects, I guess just to give a bit of chronology, to bring us present. So I mentioned that I went to Temple for media studies, specifically media literacy education, which was evolved out of creating after school programs with young people in the high schools that I was working in at the time in Philadelphia. And I was running a teen parent center during the day, but after school I was trying to incorporate youth and media making around issues that were that I thought were urgent or important to them. And so I began doing after school programming just because I wanted to, and getting students around the building who kept coming to my center just because they wanted to hang out there to let's do something with this time. And so that led me to go to know that I could study that and get a degree in it. And while undergrad I was doing independent media work as well, but I think that in terms of having more direction and intention around what I was doing, it wasn't until I went back to grad school and began working with young people in that way and trying to figure out how to incorporate my passions, which was young people and media making. And so from there, I met a lot of the colleagues who I still work with now in the media world, and did a lot of different production roles and education roles within media making, particularly nonfiction film, moving images in that way. And so it kind of led me on a trajectory around video and film production, particularly as we went from analog to digital and what it meant to make film in a digital age. And then I began getting into community media and started to work for and provide workshops and classes around media education for the community, not just for young people. And so I stayed in Philly after getting my master's and was both working for a community media organization around access to the internet, access to computers, access to computer skills. So I was working a lot with older folks, working a lot with organizations that was trying to use media to amplify their causes and things that they were fighting around in the city of Philadelphia, and then continuing to work with young people and teach filmmaking and production, and all the while doing other passion projects with colleagues that then became friends. So I've worked on feature film projects on location in Alaska as a script supervisor. I've produced videos for corporate entities, for college entities. I do a lot of videography work. Most recently, I did I produced a video for Harvard University for one of their conferences that they had around sexual assault prevention and response. The Office of Sexual Assault Prevention and Response. They had a day-long conference for people who work in that field. And so sometimes I get hired from institutions to cover an event and then create a recap or highlight video around that event so they can amplify that work. I do collaborative work with other artists, doing video installations for some of their work, so visual artists, painters, artists of that sort. At this time, you know, want a lot of media installation to supplement their paintings or their live work, and so I started collaborating with colleagues who became friends who asked me to start doing that work. So my past work has evolved in various directions. I also do programming for film festivals, particularly the Black Star Film Festival in Philly. I managed their youth program for a number of years. So I do a multitude of things within media education and media making. And currently I have been particularly, more specifically working in videography work, and still doing some education work in the city from time to time. So I work for BRIC Media Arts in Brooklyn. Actually, I'll be doing they have a creative aging grant in which they hire teaching artists like myself to come in and work with senior citizens to make produce media from their perspective. And I did that last year for them, and we'll do that again this year. So I'm excited about that.
Am excited to hear about all the things that you're doing and have done, and which is why I wanted you to come, because, listeners, you all heard these ladies say that they went away. They left Hudson. They sort of spread their wings to fly, and then they flew back home to Hudson. And these are just a couple of some of the best and the brightest of Black Hudsonians that we have around out here, and I'm so proud of you two. And I was reading the other day, I probably should have known this already, but they have a lunch career something at the high school where they invite people to come in during a lunch session and they present to the young people. So I want to put in a plug to the superintendent or the principal, Mr. Classy Gassy. They might be reaching out to you too, so you can come in and talk about, your careers for our students over here. I think that's amazing that you all are back here, and happy to have you back here. And I am looking for some wonderful things. I'm so glad to be part of this connecting right here. There's another bright Hudsonian. I'm going to come back to you though, but there's another, because in the interest of time, but there's another bright Black Hudsonian that has spread his wings. And he's your brother, and you're here with your mother, and I'm gonna let her boast and brag on her son a little bit. You have something really exciting coming up. You were telling me you're getting a dress made and gonna be looking all glam and fabulous to go and do what?
Yes, Michael, he also wrote a book back 10 years ago. Maybe more.
Yeah, while he was living here in Hudson.
Yeah, he wrote when he was living here in Hudson before gentrification happened. and he had to move. Mm-hmm. He wrote a children's book that was supposed to be it's styled under like the Curious George style for the youth, and it was of the whale. He found out that Hudson was a whaling town, so he wrote a storybook of a young whale who went sailing up the Hudson River, discovering all of the different towns and identities of people that were going up there, and just being curious. And he wanted it to be a kind of thing that the youth got involved in, and he was working with the libraries where they would have workshops, and the youth would work up stories to, and it would be a growing thing.
Do you remember the name of the book?
Henry the Patchwork Whale.
Henry the Patchwork Whale.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Ooh, say that three times fast. Henry the Patchwork Whale.
I think you can still get it on Amazon. Yeah, it's still available.
Oh, mm-hmm. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. And so more recently now, because we're running out of time, let's get to what's going on now.
Now, since high school, Michael used to put art on clothes, and he used to do he learned how to do it at Hudson High School, where he was doing airbrush work on the teacher's clothes, and now he's painting on clothes. And so even though he got bumped out of Hudson, he kept on doing it. And so down in Florida, he made a name for himself, and he was on ABC News a couple of months ago when somebody picked it up. And now he's on he's a featured designer at a fashion week in Manhattan at Times Square. He's going to be one of their featured designers on Saturday. And so, yes, we're going to be celebrating the fact that now we have a Hudsonian being a featured designer at Fashion Week. A big prayer for him.
Snaps and claps, huh?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And we are thrilled about that. I wanted to get Michael on when she told me. I said, oh, he can call in. And she said, oh, he's going to be too busy. And
oh,
I was
yeah,
like, yeah, he's going to be too busy. You come on in here.
And his thing is love is key.
Yes.
Love is key. And that's what propelled his whole movement. Is that it's a unity thing of people working together, and that was what his conversation was on the news, and they just got so excited about him, and so somebody picked it up. Yes.
And that's happening down in Times Square this Saturday.
Yes, at 4:00.
At 4:00. Well, I know you're going to get lots of pictures taken. Send them on up here so we can get them out and let Michael know when he catches his breath. Mm-hmm. We'd like him to call in and be on the radio
that
with us.
That would be very nice.
He can tell us about his journey and about his experience at Fashion Week.
Oh, hey, maybe
yeah.
We can
and if you want to check out his work, he goes by Lowkey, L-O-K-I, Designs with a Z on Instagram, or lowkey.artlife.
And where can they get in touch with you, Miss Tanya?
Yes, you can get in touch with me on Facebook. I'm like, I haven't been really connected to social media. I need to work on that a little bit. But I am on Facebook under my name, Tanya Jackson. Instagram, I don't have a public page for my work yet, but I would say Facebook for now, just Tanya Jackson on Facebook. Or you can email me, msjackson.tanya@gmail.com.
All right, so there you have it, beloved, out here in Brightside Land. There's some bright and beautiful people here in the studio with me today and doing some praiseworthy things with their gifts and their talents and their skills. And we are celebrating Black History Month. We're getting it kicked off. It could have been Women's History Month, too, because they're going to be making some history as women as well. But, yeah, we wanted to get them in here to kick off our observance of Black History Month. While February is the shortest month of the year, we are not shortchanged. Mm-hmm. It was selected because President Abraham Lincoln was born in February. And he is the president that was brave and bold enough to have a war that would keep the states united and free slaves. Not only free slaves, but abolish slavery. And so we celebrate Black History Month in this month for that reason. But it's also to celebrate our past, our present, and our future, and to acknowledge our ancestry for their contributions here in America and around the world. And so snaps and claps to all the ancestors and to all of you out there. I want to say happy birthday to all of the February-born babies. And and Kimberly is a when is your birthday? Monday?
My birthday is on February 12th, which is Lincoln's birthday.
Look at there, look at there. Flesh and blood did not reveal that. Well, happy birthday to you and your next 365 revolutions around the sun. Be blessed. Be merry Solar and return. Blessed. Also, want to shout out to all those who are in love, lucky in love. Remember Valentine's Day. And gentlemen, get creative. Get creative. You got Google at your disposal. If you don't know how to be creative, you just ask Google for some ideas. But show the one you love how much you love them. Hallmark, you know, they making money off of this, but it's okay. It's a great day to be with the one you love and love the one you're with. Also, we want to shout out for those who have been waiting for that question to get popped. It's leap year. You know, so, you know, you have license now to just go ahead and pop the question yourself, right? Want to say happy leap year to everybody. The Lord's saying the same. I'll be back again on the third Wednesday with There's a Bright Side Somewhere right here at WGXC is with me, Pastor Kim, your perpetual optimist. I want you to remember and never forget, as I always say, no matter how low the clouds may hang or how gray the day, the sun still shines and there is a bright side somewhere. I'm going to try one more time to give y'all some music and play one of these songs that I queued up for you today. If I don't succeed, I'll be back to talk a little bit more. But this one... people of a certain age know this one. It was recorded. We are the world. We are the children. Let's make this a brighter day, a brighter world, a brighter way for you and for me and for our children. Till we speak again, beloved, God loves you and I do too.
There comes a time when we heed a certain call, when the world must come together as one. There are people dying. Oh, when it's time to lend a hand to life, the greatest gift of all. We can go on pretending day by day that someone somewhere will soon make a change. All a part of God's great big family. And the truth, you know, love is all we need.